Oh, Kenny Dorm with Aphrodisia and the Kenny Dorm Sextet, of course, playing, backing him up, a great group. J.J. Johnson, the famous trombonist, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Cecil Payne on baritone sax, Horace Silver, imagine that, on piano, Oscar Pettiford on bass, Art Blakey on drums, and Carlos Patato Valdez on congas. This is from 1955, a 10-inch vinyl titled Afro-Cuban. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today we are going to follow up on our discussion that began yesterday about the president. And he's come in for quite a bit of criticism, even from Republicans. As we speak, a lawsuit is making its way through the courts, comprising of 16 participants in this lawsuit, representing the states of Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, and Virginia, spearheaded by the Attorney General of California, Javier Becerra, and they are challenging Donald Trump's this idea that the country suddenly finds itself under his command at in a state of national emergency. Their contention is there is no emergency, certainly not the emergency that Donald Trump and his administration describe, but there is an illegal effort, they contend, to switch funds. It's a bait and switch kind of thing going on here. As you know, the fight had been over the $5.7 billion that Donald Trump had demanded that Congress allot to him so that this wall could be built on the southern border. And there was no reaction to that. In retaliation, that's the only way you can describe it, the president declared a furlough immediately that would affect 800,000 federal workers. They would not get their checks. They would not get paid. But they were commanded, essentially, to continue to work, even though they were not getting paid. The idea is that when this is all sorted out, you'll eventually get paid, maybe. So he did not get the $5.7 billion, which he had tried to extort. The Congress had voted that there is no national emergency, certainly not to the extent that Trump was describing it. And their information came from the same source, I imagine, that Trump's information came from, but he disregarded. And that was, the Department of Homeland Security. You have the Pentagon actually, people testifying in Congress that this emergency, this dire emergency of undocumented workers just running across the border, roughshod across the border, coming into the United States and immediately embarking on programs of murder and slaughtering people and killing children and whatnot. None of that was happening according to the experts. His own Department of Defense said there was no such emergency. These things weren't happening. This is not to say that there were some reported crimes and that these crimes were documented, but certainly not the way Trump was painting it. Like there was this mass exodus from Mexico, coming from Mexico, south of the border anyway, and he included Central and South American countries, and they were just waiting like locusts to cross the border and start eating everything up. No such thing, they said. His own intelligence department, his own Department of Homeland Security, his own Pentagon, the FBI, all of these national security people said there was no such thing. This is not a major emergency. So Trump got stung by that because the Democrats faced him down on it. He did not expect that there would be a face down. He did not expect that there would be a challenge, and worse, that they would hold their ground. The topic, after all, was extremely emotional, very electric. It got a lot of attention because bottom line was that the demand for this wall and the budget for this wall coincided with another part of his plan, which was to terrorize and terrify both sides of the border. And that here he was trying to get this thing done, get this wall built, and it would solve a huge part of the problem. It didn't work. So we have a president who was really flogged in public. He didn't like what he got. He got busted. He got beaten. And it couldn't have happened at a worse time because the momentum, meanwhile, is building. The political momentum is building as the 2020 presidential election nears. So this would have been a triumph for him. This would have yielded him a great deal of political reward, because the wall, even if it was not finished, even if it didn't get finished before the election, it would be just well on its way. And he would have something to show his base. He would have something to boast about. And, you know, he's a solver of problems. Okay. Well, there was a little lull there, so that many of the states and many members of Congress got their act together and they thought about the implications of what Donald Trump was doing. And they put together a bipartisan challenge to Trump on a number of very important points having to do with the head of state exceeding his constitutional authority. The president cannot arbitrarily, they argued, the president cannot arbitrarily change the rules of the game to suit him. This is how Congress works. Congress did its job by rejecting his demand for $5.7 billion and expecting that, well, all he has to do is just put his hand in the till and get on with his business. But they said no. We've reconsidered your application, as it were, for a bunch of money to do some more things to this wall or this barrier, because not everywhere along the border is it a wall. It's, you know, sometimes something that looks like just a plain barrier, nothing massive or foreboding. But they said, we'll give you $1.375 billion. And that should suffice for what you identify as an additional need. The addition being, in addition to what is already there, we will allot $1.375 billion so that you can extend the physical barrier and fill in a gap of some 55 miles. And that would help. That would certainly keep the concept of the wall going. We don't see and we don't agree, and experts are saying we should use our money wisely, and this at this time is not a wise use of 5.7 billion. We'll give you 1.375. But Trump has decided that what he would do is take money that has been allocated for other programs under other departments. For example, he expects to access 3.6 billion from military construction funds. But those funds had been asked for and allocated to do specific things in terms of military construction. That was already in play. That's already approved. So Trump wants to just go into that fund, take out that money, and add it to the 1.375 billion that he did get. I mean, it wasn't a total loss for him. He did get some money, but it was a political defeat. He would divert as much as 2.5 billion from an anti-narcotics program, and then he would take $601 million from a Treasury Department fund. Now, all of this money that I just mentioned had already been allocated and is to fund specific programs in these various departments. Trump is saying, I'm going to take the money from these departments. You only gave me a measly 1.375 billion and not the 5.7 billion that I must have. And so there's another way to skin the cat, and it is to raid the coffers of other departments, just take the money and be done with it. Now, Congress is saying this is unilateral action by the president. He has no authority to do that. He has no authority to declare an emergency. We, members of Congress, do not recognize that there is a national emergency, and certainly not a national emergency as regards the construction of a wall. We have appraised the problem. We have taken a look at the problem. Yes, the expenses could be augmented, and we did that. We allocated 1.375 billion so that there would be 55 miles of border covered. Not with the wall that you want, but a standing border control. And that suffices. Your own experts are saying there's no emergency. We have been to the border ourselves. We find no emergency. We took a look at the facts and figures, the crime facts and figures and so forth. We see no emergency. The Department of Homeland Security and how it processes requests for people to cross the border and so forth, their statistics are indicating no emergency. But you have decided unilaterally to declare an emergency. And even so, there are requirements as to when an emergency can be declared by a president. Those circumstances do not exist. So we are against that. Now, the 16 states have come together and they are going to oppose Donald Trump in the court. This is where the big fight is going to start. it would be interesting to see how Trump maneuvers his argument and how he faces down 16 states and how he faces them down with a specious argument that an emergency exists. Everybody is saying there's no emergency. I talked about this on this program. There's no emergency there. And if there were an emergency, how could you have an emergency happening unless it's something supernatural? This kind of emergency would not happen overnight. So we'll see how this case goes. So we have as the argument to buttress their lawsuit that the president is acting unilaterally. He has usurped congressional authority. They had spoken. It was clear. Their decision was clear. And the lawsuit contends that the president is usurping congressional authority. And most important of all, he is setting a dangerous precedent by acting unilaterally and usurping the authority of Congress. He is making it as of if he wins in the court, or that's to say if the states lose in the court, the president would have established for other presidents a very dangerous way of doing business, which is contrary to how Congress was envisioned under the Constitution. That especially when it comes to budgetary matters and things like this, that there's to be a give and take, there's to be a dialogue, there is to be a process. Trump says, I don't care about a process. I just want my money. I'll get it by any means necessary. I don't care if by taking money out of one pot and putting it in the wall pot, I don't care whether it diminishes the strength of these other departments and what they have to do and what they're committed to doing and what they have specifically been funded for. So it's going to be a very interesting thing to see where this goes. Very interesting to see where this goes. But it's interesting, too, that they use the word dangerous. It's dangerous. The president is setting a dangerous precedent. And it's a word that has, you know, come up in connection with Trump many, many times. And most recently yesterday, when we found that the former ethics attorney for President Bush, Richard Painter, says that Trump is dangerous. He's become dangerous. Why? Because he says, and he makes no bones about it, he says Trump is not mentally well and should be removed under the 25th Amendment, and that process needs to begin quickly and as soon as possible. Let me read this story from, of all places, Fox News. This is a news organization that is seen as being very, very pro-Trump. It's a short enough story. President Donald Trump is, quote, not well at all mentally, unquote. And Congress needs to remove him under the 25th Amendment. Former President George W. Bush's chief ethics attorney, Richard Painter, said Monday. Speaking on MSNBC's The 11th Hour with Brian Williams, Painter accused Trump of throwing a hissy fit after Congress didn't give him the $5 billion he initially requested for the wall and instead declared a national emergency along the U.S. southern border with Mexico. Painter, whose dumpster fire ad during his failed U.S. Senate bid was widely mocked, called Trump's actions illegal. Quote, I think we need to understand, though, why we are in this situation. The president is not well at all mentally. I think he is an extreme narcissist. He has been denied what he wants, his wall, and he's having a hissy fit. He's out of control, and he will not take no for an answer from Congress. And he's going to do this. He's going to insist on doing he's going to insist on doing what he's doing, and it will tear the country apart. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal. He's going to do enormous damage to the Republican Party, which is going to split right down the middle over this. And we really need to keep in mind that this is because the president is not well. He is not capable of doing the job. He does need to be removed under the 25th Amendment, but he stocked his cabinet with people who are unwilling to do that, and Congress is apparently unwilling even to try to remove him through impeachment. Trump on Friday declared a national emergency to complete construction of his multi-billion dollar project along the U.S.-Mexico border. All right, so it's said. It finally has been said, and said loudly. According to this former high-level person. His name is Richard Painter, and he was the former ethics attorney. It's kind of ironic that you have people serving in administrations that were not so ethical at all. But hey, somebody's got to do the job. But he says directly, he's not hiding it, he says that Trump is not well, and must be removed from office under the 25th Amendment, which has to do with the capacity of a president to do his job. If there is any evidence that the president simply does not measure up or is doing his job very poorly, the 25th Amendment provides the authority to remove the president, for Congress to remove the president. And then curiously, I saw something that was quite interesting. And it surfaced, and that was a report by a psychiatrist's association saying that they have concerns about the president's mental acuity. So it's interesting that these topics are coming up now again, and in the case of Painter, anew, about the mental capacity of the president. Now, even though he has said he intends to build the wall, he intends to build this barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border, Even though he didn't get the full amount of money that he had demanded and that he had pretty much extorted or attempted to extort from Congress by imperiling the livelihoods of 800,000 workers. Remember, I said these are not the actions of a person who is, wrapped tightly mentally. These are the actions of somebody with some deep mental problems who is managing to get his way because he is so feared and so fearsome when he's after something and it must go his way. He has no concept as a president of how a president interacts with Congress. He has no interest in that conversation. He knows what he wants done, and because the United States is his personal property and he can do whatever he wants within it, hey, what's your problem? That's his way of thinking. There's nothing wrong here. But now we see also he's not leaving it up to this kind of behavior is not just within the borders of the United States. Just yesterday, the president upped the ante in Venezuela. Now, we have to ask what the heck is going on? How much longer do we permit a president to behave this way and possibly cause major, major repercussions for all of the people of the United States by his unilateral actions. Trump decided that he was going to keep the pressure on, and he had already involved himself in the internal affairs of a sovereign country. He wants Maduro gone. This is his personal desire. He wants him gone, a duly elected president of another country. And he's taking measures that are tantamount to acts of war. The bombs are not being dropped, but he's dropping economic bombs. He's tying up whatever Venezuelan assets he can put his hands on in the United States. He's tied that up. And now he is directly communicating with the military of Venezuela that they should abandon Maduro, or this is the implicit threat that he's making, you either abandon Maduro or you will lose everything. What the hell does that mean? Why do we permit a president to talk like this? What business does he have being directly involved in the affairs of a sovereign nation and calling the shots as he sees it? What Venezuela's military should do, it is to switch sides, it is to go against Maduro, undermine his government. And we know what all this implies. This is a direct plea by a head of state to do direct harm to another head of state, to kill him, to assassinate him. But being careful with some of the wording to suggest, I'm just really calling for democracy. What I really am after is a peaceful transition. Trump's actions do not indicate that what he's after is a peaceful transition. His words do not indicate that he is interested in a peaceful transition in Venezuela. He is interested in encouraging a civil war, but war. He's interested in backing somebody who was not elected, but who announced himself as the provisional president of the country. He is actually recruiting other nations, Trump is, to support this acting president who installed himself. And now he is actively appealing to the military, which so far is holding the line of fidelity to Nicolas Maduro, the current president, elected president of Venezuela. Excuse me. So we have, excuse me. So we have some questions here, and I do not divorce these questions from, again, his mental condition, his mental acuity, his capacity to lead. He openly is leading this country to war. He's encouraging a regional war. He's encouraging other countries to take sides. I want you to support the new guy. Give him all of your help and assistance in crushing the elected president of a sovereign nation. So that's the question I raise to you today. Is the president, is it time to look seriously at applying the provisions of the 25th Amendment of the United States, making it as the focal point of argument that the president's conduct suggests that he is out of his mind and that his unilateral actions, which make very little sense in the real world, are imperiling the country, putting the country in danger. Now, people would think, well, you know, that's just Trump talking. No, this is a very serious matter. You know, if it, say it's not Venezuela, say it's another country that the president is choosing to aggravate by creating chaos within that country, by encouraging civil war in that country, by even threatening to attack the country to support opposition forces. If, as preemptive action, such a country would decide, hey, I'll bomb you before you bomb me? Would such a country be right to take preemptive action because the president of this country has been fast and loose with his mouth and has assured the entire world he is prepared to back up what he says with military action? He said so. I want a peaceful transition, but everything is on the table, he says. I mean, do we need as a country to constantly be in the grips of a person who is extorting us as citizens of this country? You don't know what the heck is likely to happen on any given day, depending on the mood he's in when he wakes up or when he goes to sleep. So we'll take this break right now and come back to your questions and your comments at 888-874-4888 right after the short break. Thank you. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Trace Lead, and we're talking about indications, at least this is what is fueling a new concern. It has been expressed before. We had a group of psychiatrists who last year, as you recall, because we talked about it at length and read their assessment of the president, saying it was their duty to warn the nation that they noticed patterns of behavior in the president and in his mindset and in the things that he says and does that are very dangerous, that are potentially dangerous for the country. They were poo-pooed and booed and a lot of criticism heaped upon them, saying, "Here, look, here's a bunch of liberals who just want to attack the president for no reason." But they reminded people in that report that what they were doing by disseminating their assessment of the president through his actions and through what he has said and done, that they see signs in this president that concern them as professionals. And as professionals, they are duty bound to warn. In fact, they issued the report under the commitment to the duty to warn. And we see more and more of this kind of reference as it applies to Donald Trump. These are not silly people with nothing to do. They made very pointed observations, and they did so in the interest of the country. They said that they have a compelling argument to make and a duty to warn the country. That was last year. 888-874-4888. Khalil from South Carolina, you start us off today.
Hi, Utrice. How are you doing today?
Okay. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. So it's about time that the second wave of the mental health community has gotten some traction in their assessment of the president's mental state, because to many of us, it was apparent during the campaign. And it was more apparent immediately after the inauguration, when the president insisted that his crowd size was larger, to the point where he had a blown up picture in his office that clearly showed a smaller crowd size. But that's just touching the surface. But I feel like Richard Painter was really on point with this, in that the cabinet, this really hinges on Pence. See, it's complicated to win the Second Amendment. The
25th.
Right. The 25th Amendment is very difficult. It's very, very difficult. Okay. But the thing is, as I predicted, everything happened exactly as I predicted last time we talked. If you notice, these things are in court now. But you see, this is the beginning of the erosion of his support with the GOP, because he's in a corner now, and there's not much he can do. He will not get support. When Nancy Pelosi files a declaration, Mitch McConnell will have to bring it to the floor, which is going to force some Republicans to either face their base or do the right thing. And I think this dovetails into what you mentioned yesterday, in that, we have, it's interesting what you said. You said, well, did Trump do his job? In other words, when you run to win. He did his job. Now, when And I'll take Lindsey Graham. Now, he's a senator for my, he's my senator, right? I don't agree with him, but he represents me. But he's trying to save his job. He has totally reversed his opinion on Trump at this point. Now, what he's trying to do is rally support and make it palatable for other Republicans to stand behind Trump, even though they know it's not right. It's wrong.
Right. Well, you know, because there was talk at some point that Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, might be a victim of some kind of extortion from those within the Trump camp. We don't know that yet, and that's why at the beginning he was very, very, very protective of Donald Trump. But I think you're right, he sees the tables turning somewhat, and you know, he is a politician after all, and the number one duty is survival. So he's going where the wind blows. Thanks, Khalil, for getting us started today. Lisa from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you today?
Hello. Okay. How are you, Lisa?
I'm fine. You know, I just had to call in because I tend not to focus on Trump. And I don't think that what's going on in Venezuela is by any means unilateral, you know, something that the president is doing. We've got Pence, we've got Bolton, Pompeo, and I think that we as American people need to focus on our foreign policy a lot more than we focus on just domestic issues. This is what we do. We did it in Libya, we're in Syria, we went into Iraq. Supposedly there were weapons of mass destruction. It's all a bunch of lies. Maduro,
yes,
as of course
time,
you know.
At the same time, Lisa, there is this question of the role of this president.
Well, I understand
he started,
that.
He started an action, and he started a campaign. And
well, I really do believe that behind the scenes, when it comes to Venezuela, he is not the only one. Perhaps the Republicans are upset that he's so outspoken about what he's trying to do. You know, I don't like the Democrats either. And people like Nancy Pelosi want to pretend that they're the good guys. But they're for this. They want for us to go into Venezuela. And we've taken away Maduro's assets, you know, oil assets, gold assets. And I really think, you know, I listen to your show every day. I love it.
Thank you.
Don't call because I don't know what to say in terms of what actions people can take. But I really do think that everyone should at least call their representatives and let them know that they're against this, you know, this invasion or, you know, this...
This is what it looks like.
Trying
it looks like
an attempted
ending
coup.
Invasion, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it upsets me so much. I feel like everyone is so focused on Trump ever since the election that I just tend not to really focus on him at all because I just see it's a much bigger picture with all of the oligarchs. You know, this is happening in Europe, too. They just decide that they're going to recognize someone who's unknown in Venezuela. And there's been not only a democratic election, but there were outside observers. And under Chavez and Maduro, this is when the people of Venezuela have been able to benefit from the oil money. You know, before that, the people of Venezuela were poverty-stricken. Now they are because of all of our sanctions. And we need to think about sanctions, too, because that's an act of war.
Well, you see, we have to... I understand why you know, resent the idea of concentrating on Trump. But he is, in fact, at the epicenter of all of this confusion, which is, of course, his trademark, which caused mass chaos and confusion. And here we see him, for all kinds of reasons, political and social and certainly economic, but he is playing a role. He's playing a role as catalyst. He's playing a role as the head of state of the United States. So we should pay some attention to where this is all going. We've been talking about it, and I'm like you. I'm very distressed about it.
Well, and I agree
with you. Seeing
it
happening in slow motion.
Yes. I agree with you that, yes, he plays a part, and I feel like the rest of the country is doing that for me. They're all focused on Trump. I feel like there was one more. So the other thing about Trump, though, okay, so let's say we impeach him, so we get Pence. I'm sorry, but I feel like Pence is one of, I guess I should have something to back this up, one of the most evil people, you know, that I see in this government. So then what do we do?
Well, even if you get Pence, the merciful thing is that he wouldn't last long in office. He's got, 2 years of Trump's remaining term. So that's a merciful act in itself.
I guess so. But, you know, Bernie Sanders just announced that he's running for president.
Yes.
I think that if the Democrats don't do something other than talk about Trump and how we have to beat Trump and don't come up with their own agenda, they're going to have difficulty.
Thank you, Lisa. An excellent point. Thank you so much for calling in today. Stuart from California, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you
hear
me? Hello. Yeah. Boy, I've been exploding with all kinds of things to say, but it's hard for me to call in. I'll have to put some of it aside because I know it's not your subject right now. But what he's doing, well, there's no question about the whole business with the wall. I mean, I don't even have to talk about that because that's obvious. But this business with Venezuela, to me, is nothing different than what a lot of other past presidents have done. Just like, I forgot her name, but it's a lot of what she was talking about. We've done this in other countries, and we tell the public, the government, the media tells the public, this is the reason, you know, like weapons of mass destruction, when it's really a lie. Same thing with Libya, on and on and on with Nicaragua. But I think it's the way he's gone about it. Otherwise, this is what our government does. And other concerns that are, to me, are just as bad, or this business. Gary has been talking about this on his show before your show a lot lately, which is mandatory vaccines around our country when he has proof that there's no efficacy or safety, and it's all a big it's a pharmaceutical company industry trying to force the issue because they want the money. So a lot of people are going to be forced to have vaccines now, and everyone's been lied to about how good they are for you. There's even a talk show host on Free Speech TV that he thinks vaccines are fine. I think this guy really doesn't know what he's talking about.
Get back to the subject
right.
Of Trump.
Okay. I guess the subject is Venezuela and the wall and the impeachment
and people and an unusual expression coming from different quarters, an unusual expression about the danger that people in these arenas believe is posed by Donald Trump. as president. That's the unique thing.
Yeah, I think it's the way he's going about doing a lot of what is pretty much the same as other past presidents, but it's the way he's going about it, I think, is what is causing the danger.
Well, the danger, they're saying, is mental. Mentally, he is unfit. This is what the thrust of the discussion is, that the president is taking all these unprecedented actions because he is in deep mental distress and has been.
Yeah.
You say yeah.
I can see that, definitely. But like I said, a lot of past presidents have not been that mentally centered either.
Great, but that doesn't make a good argument to say, well, you know.
Oh yeah, true. I guess I'm. To me, it's about what people are focusing on, and like you said, everyone's focusing on Trump. But I think they're not realizing that this is nothing new with our government. It's just the way he's going about it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Stuart, for your call today. Ed from Queens, you will be our last caller today. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Yatrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed.
The fundamental danger when they talk about the danger with Trump, aside from his what I feel is obvious mental defect or mental disease that he suffers from, is the precedent that he is setting with the office. Yes, the policy, you can talk about the Monroe Doctrine, we can talk about Allende, we can talk about Chile, we can talk about all of these practices that went on. You talk about the Dulles brothers, talk about the 1960s, talk about CIA and other intelligence organizations, infiltration in South America to promote one regime or the other. The problem is he's putting it on Front Street. He's doing it out in Broadway. And he's setting a benchmark for future presidents or for future rulers that get in the same position, and these things are becoming more commonplace. They're violating a sovereign state. That's the problem. You're violating a sovereign state. You're coming into a country. You're dictating your own political aspirations for financial and corporate gain, and you're violating a sovereign state. And this, yes, it's not anything new, but when does it stop? When do the people of this country get up and say, hey, look, we don't want this. We don't want the repercussions of this, which are terrorism, which are immigration, which are people violating borders to escape tyranny, which is fostered and funded by this country. That's what needs to be stopped. Trump is just a manifestation of years and years of this stuff going on. And the thing that makes people scared about him is because he puts no shade on it. He has no moral, no moral compulsion whatsoever. And what did you think was going to happen after years and years of doing this to other countries? And eventually, I tell you the truth. You know, people don't realize since the fall of the Soviet Union, there are over 90 missing suitcase-sized nuclear weapons that are floating around somewhere out there in the world. And I tell you, sooner or later, there's going to be a mushroom cloud over Manhattan. Sooner or later.
But let me ask you, in what way are you interpreting the actions of these 16 states that are challenging him, the revival of that report by the Psychiatric Association, and just the resistance in Congress, such as it is? How do you interpret all of this then?
Well, it's an attempt. I mean, it's an attempt to number one, contain a person who obviously has some type of mental defect, number one. And number two, I think it's a final realization to see that all of this has been going on for so long and to varying degrees that people have started to call it out and they're trying to put a handle on it. I don't know if it's too late, but they're trying to put a handle on all this behavior. These things have been going on for years. Like I told you.
I know, but the thing is that It is happening now, and we are in the here and now. So how do we deal with it? That's the question. But we have to leave it here for today. Ed, your analysis is excellent, and I thank you for contributing. And tomorrow we come back to each other. Same bat time, same bat channel, as they used to say. Bye-bye.